Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Get up again and smile. Get up again and smile.
Good morning and welcome to Our Black News, the first show on Blog Talk Radio. My special guest host, Mr. Jonathan Mason. Good morning, John. How you doing, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing, buddy?
And I'm telling you, this has not really been a spring break. As a teacher, as we were talking in the production meeting, you know, I just want to remind all the parents. First of all, I want to say thank you for all the hard work that all the teachers have been putting in, using a lot of their spring break to develop distant learning plans for their students and their classes and how to engage their classes. And my hat's off to everybody because I know personally I was knee-deep into it. And on Monday in St. Paul, the spring break is over, and we hit the online stuff with the students. And I would just like to remind parents of school-age children to make sure you're checking those iPads and your emails, because the teachers are doing their due diligence in connecting with you and making sure that, you know, your senior graduates this year, your junior moves to the 12th grade, and your sixth grader gets to go to the 7th grade. So it's important that we congratulate those teachers, but also be mindful of this new futuristic platform, quick story, and then we can move on. In 1973, in sixth grade, it was either 73 or 74, my teacher in Minneapolis at Bancroft Elementary School, on the third floor in the corner, the east corner, his name was Mr. Lewis Boone. And I was complaining one morning, like, oh, man, this is too early to be at school. You know, I'm still tired, you know, knowing that I couldn't stay at home. And so I was just, you know what, Don? He goes, and this is 1973 or 74. He says, one day you're going to be able to get up at home with your pajamas, go down and have breakfast, then go sit in a little cubicle in your house and have school from home. You're not even going to have to worry about coming to the building in the future. And that future starts tomorrow in St. Paul. And you just got to look at this as the evolution of education and how it will break apart a lot of the stagnant and static things going on in education, because this is the whole new ball game, and I'm loving every minute of it. What are your thoughts, Jonathan?
With this distance learning, it's definitely a new element that many of us, you know, are ready for, aren't ready for, and you know, there's disadvantages and advantages of it, and you know, I think that for many of us, you know, this last week, for my children, I can talk specifically, getting them, you know, online, whether it's on, you know, Zoom, so, you know, like a webcam, and getting, or, you know, an app-based webcam where you can get your kids, you know, doing all of the things that they need to stay, like you said, to stay up, whether it's them graduating or them, you know, being able to stay up with the curriculum for the remainder of the year. You know, I know a lot of teachers are frustrated. I don't know how you're doing per se, but I know that this last week, you know, for my daughter's third grade or her second grade class, she, you know, they all got on there. So what I noticed were there's some kids at home, you know, at very young age, they're by themselves. So their parents are workers. They still have to work. They have no child care, and they're trying to have their kid get online with the classroom. And their behavior is not the best, I would say. And so now, you know, teachers are having to navigate through difficult situations on there. So I think that this is, it's going to be good for some, definitely a new arena for others. And I think that, you know, just being a parent, just making sure you're trying to get all of the various technologies that you need, whether it's, you know, maybe a new computer, you have to reach out to the appropriate people, I think, at the school district. And a lot of these districts have been really good on, you know, reaching out to the parents, trying to get the, you know, email addresses, phone numbers, and trying to stay in touch. But right now it's going to be definitely crucial for our communities of color when you're trying to talk about, is it equitable? Because I know it's, a lot of people are struggling right now. It's even tight on me, you know. I kind of was planning for, you know, a rainy day, but this is more, much more than a rainy day. So I had to evaluate some things. So I know a lot of parents are, you know, education might not be the number one thing on their mind right now, being that, you know, their livelihood and their survival instincts are starting to kick in. So, you know, it's going to be definitely a new thing that we're all going to have to brace for. I think it is the way of the future. So parents, do be, you know, do be prepared for the things that are going to come about. But like you said, it's definitely good for some. I don't know how all teachers feel, but maybe for you, Don, it's a good thing. But there's definitely pros and cons.
Yeah. It was just, you know, and to put a pin in it, it was cool. You know, it was really funny because 3 or 4 weeks before, after we heard about the coronavirus on that cruise ship,
right?
I went and downloaded some software, some educational software where the students could, like, you know, broadcast to me, film videos, whatever they needed to do to complete their assignments via video posting. And we went.
What did you go with?
Well, at the time, I can't say because it's not approved.
Oh, okay.
But I was texting out the technology and getting the kids used to the technology, and they had a great time. They had a great time. If there are any educators out there that would like to call in and talk about this or discuss it, our telephone number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. I know other folks have different examples or situations that they're in. I know there are some that are struggling with the technology, and we're just going to have to get really, really creative and reach out and touch these students and get in contact with them. Moving on real quick, I almost forgot this, Jonathan. Monday the 27th, if I'm not mistaken, of March. No, Friday the 27th of March. It was Francie Rae Day, Francie Rae McCloney, the Twin Cities.
Oh, yeah.
He was celebrating his debut album, The Best Looking Man in Comedy, and I did ask him to call in, but, you know, Francie's all busy getting booked up on different shows, and he was on the Tom Bernard podcast last week. He was on WCCO. He's featured in the City Pages, and so we'll hear from him when the dust settles, I'm sure. I just want to say congratulations to Francie Rae McCloney and the release of his album, The Best Looking Man in Comedy. Let's give it up for it. Okay. So, Jonathan, are you wearing a mask and gloves in public?
Yes, I am. For the longest time, and I said this on, you know, various, you know, social media sites and stuff like this, when I heard immediately about the mask, the information that was coming out of China with the N95 mask and how that dramatically stopped the spread of it, I knew right away that there was going to be a shortage on it. And so I actually, with my business, I have my main business, which is Mason Tree LLC, but then I have a furniture company. And so I had a mask that I use for, you know, staining for, you know, organic vapors and stuff like that. And so I use that. And so I do have a couple that I've been wearing out in public. And then, you know, just, you know, some regular old, you know, vinyl or nitrate gloves. But right now I can't even find anymore. You know, the masks are all gone from like Home Depot and hardware stores that are deemed essential businesses, but they just don't have them. So I am wearing it. I'm trying to take all the precautions because I know many of these areas like New York and Louisiana and stuff are being hit hard, but we haven't even seen what's about to come the next, you know, 3 to 4 weeks. And within probably 2 to 3 weeks, we might get up to 100,000 dead bodies. And it's sad to say, and it's just an unfortunate time right now. But we do have to take the precautions and, you know, take heed to the information that's coming out, even though it is a little confusing, to say the least, from the top when you're listening to, you know, some of the people in government, whether it's our president, Jared Kushner, or, you know, I think Steve Mnuchin has been pretty, you know, pretty vocal and been direct and articulate on what's going on. But, you know, the checks are going to have to come, and a lot of people are in a, you know, bad situation. So are you wearing, you know, like a mask and gloves when you leave out?
Well, you know, I've only been out of the house twice in 2 weeks, and both of those were grocery runs. So I actually saw this YouTube video and made a mask. And then I went and took some charcoal and crushed it and put it in this little pad thing and then glued it back together, and it goes down in the mask. You know, charcoal is supposed to be a great filter.
Oh, it is. It's known as a good filter.
And so I made my own. It's pretty tacky. It's red or burgundy. It's pretty tacky, but it does. It functions. And then my wife, who is allergic to dishwater, that was a joke. She has boxes and boxes of rubber gloves already throughout the years. You know.
Oh,
so,
wonderful.
Yeah. So we find ourselves. She pulled. Hey, I got like 6 boxes of these because I wasn't going to touch any dishwater. And so she keeps a box under the sink, and that box is moved from under the sink to one in each car, one by the back door, one by the front door. And so, I mean, you have to be cautious. One of our listeners sent us an article here, and it's early data shows African Americans have contracted and died of coronavirus at an alarming rate.
Oh, yeah.
And I would hope that listener would call in and talk about the article while we peruse it here in the studio. And
I don't mean to interrupt you, Don, but that is exactly what I was going to actually touch on about the African American, you know, and I like to say black people within these populated areas are being absolutely ravaged with this COVID-19, because we know that already medical field and the healthcare systems for black people has already been a touchy subject with, you know, medical workers not believing black people when they come into, you know, the hospital when they're complaining of emergencies and like that. And we know just the history of the whole nature of the beast. But right now with Chicago, Detroit, Louisiana, in Milwaukee, we know in these highly dense African American populations that the medical care is not going to be there. We know it's the Jim Crow of the North. So and so I think it's going to be really scary these next 3 weeks on what happens in the Midwest.
Yeah, there's some really alarming stats in this ProPublica.com or TV.org. The title is Coronavirus. Early data shows African Americans have contracted and died of coronavirus at an alarming rate. And I'm just perusing the article because I do want to talk about it, even if the listener does not call in. But I got down to like the third, fourth paragraph here. It says, this is put out on April 3rd, 2020, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
As of Friday morning, African Americans made up almost half of Milwaukee's 945 cases and 81% of its 27 deaths in a county whose population is 26% black. Milwaukee is one of the few places in the United States that is tracking the racial breakdown of people who have been infected by the novel coronavirus, offering a glimpse at the disproportionate destruction and infecting on black communities nationwide. So this is happening, man. And this one guy, he used to be on iHeartRadio. His name is Jack Conza. He always said, anything times zero equals zero.
Right.
So if those communities, like you just eloquently stated, if those communities in Milwaukee, Minnesota, wherever, where there's a large population of black American or African American people, whatever you like to use, had disparities, any disparities before the coronavirus, of course they're going to have disparities now. And
right.
You see that high number there, you know, anything from zero is zero. If there's nothing there, there's nothing there. So if we're not looking at that as a society, I mean, we can always reflect back to Minnesota. In Minnesota, is how does equity appear? Where does it look? Well, let's just use the classroom, for instance, since we're on it. You know, we're going to do distance learning, but in some cases, in many cases, there's not any equity in classrooms for black and brown students. So how do we expect equity to appear all of a sudden?
For distance learning.
For distance learning, exactly. So you're sitting there, you're wondering, you want to do the best you can. You know, you want your kids to do the best you can. But then we're talking about this article. You have a high number of black people in the United States, you know, especially in Milwaukee, Michigan, Louisiana, New Orleans, all those things that you stated, that are naturally the normal is poverty.
Yeah.
The media is having human disparities. And so this should be something that, you know, we look at as a people, but also demand post-corona, if there ever will be such a thing as post-corona.
Right.
demand these logistical changes in policy that will affect and change the outcome and trajectory for black Americans, period. I mean, we've been talking, Jonathan, you know this, I see out all the time in protests and all this other stuff on righteous missions. And why are we still having to do that 50 years later about the mess?
Well, and another thing is, like you touched on, is when it affects white people, this is as blunt as I'm going to put it. When it affects white people, then all of a sudden the awareness, the lights are on. Even the stuff we've been screaming about for years, you know, you could say, you know, it's not been equitable for kids in school learning, but now they can say, well, it's, and they've used the excuse, well, it's the parents never, and really the resources are all within the school district. And so when it's now, it could actually be on the parents, but now this is the time for, like we said, to, after post corona, to touch on these things like that we already know that aren't equitable. And so, you know, is it going to change immediately? I don't think so, but the awareness definitely goes on for the rest of society, due to the population being a majority white. When it affects them, you know, I only can go to what happens, you know, in these cities, you know, populated with black folks that go into the doctor and they're begging, they need a ventilator, and we just realized that the stockpile is depleted. So the stockpile is depleted. Who gets the ventilator now? And now, is it going to be, you know, if we look at the disparity numbers, is it going to be more white people getting it, more affluent, richer white people that get it? Or is it going to be a social thing? Is it going to be the rich versus the poor, which we already know that is happening as well? So I think when these ventilators, the ventilators are, what they're not telling us, they're gone. And now the federal government, if you watched many of the press conferences and stuff by the coronavirus task force, they keep on saying that these are our federal ventilators. So when you're saying our, are you meaning the federal employees? Are you talking about, you know, Trump and his associates? What's going on? Because I was assuming that it was for the, you know, the taxpayers, the American people, and now they're paying these politics. And Minnesota, I would say Minnesota's in, you know, we're in a big situation right now, being that we're bordered by North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and those states haven't even put a stay-at-home order in place yet. So those states haven't even put a stay-at-home order in place. And then we, on the other side of us, the east side, we have Chicago, Milwaukee, Detroit, Des Moines, and all these cities that we already know that are going to be ravaged, that already have disparities and inequities all over through the healthcare department. And then you think we're not going to think that there's chaos going to come after this. And so Minnesota, we have, you know, 3M, luckily we have 3M, Honeywell, you know, Medtronic, and all these other places. But you seen last week, Trump ordered 3M not to sell a mask to Canada anymore. So what happens when the PPE, and when I say PPE, that is the acronym for personal protective equipment, and when this stuff runs out and people are, this is a toilet paper now, this is stuff that, you know, we need, like, you know, masks and gloves, and then on a bigger scale, ventilators. So when people are like, well, we need ventilators for my mom or my dad or my sister or my brother, and it's already inequitable and they don't have any money and you're hungry, we're fighting around, what does this look like in the next month and a half? And
good.
So
we're
coming into some crazy times.
Yes, yes. Our caller number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And let's go to the phone lines. We do have a caller. Caller, last 45449, you're live on Our Black News. What's your question or comment?
Good morning. I just have, I have four comments. The first one is, I appreciate your format that you provide to all of us. So kudos. But going beyond that, I think we need to start questioning what people mean when they say we need to go back to normal after this virus. And I want to question the normal because as we see in our community, there's always been disparities. There's been disparities within the medical treatment and not just how people are treated once they get in and questioned as to their motive for getting treatment, but where they place the facilities to treat people of color. Okay, that's number one. And then it's the second thing is that it's not surprising that our numbers of people being affected by the coronavirus is high because a lot of our jobs are service-type jobs in the sense that they're not real high-paying jobs. Unfortunately, some are like maybe doing some are high-paying jobs, prep or
service workers,
or maybe bus drivers, but they're basically service-oriented. So what does the nation need to do to take care of us? And we really need to focus on, we don't want things to go back to normal. We need things to go back to, you know, or go to a place of better than what has been the norm in the past. So those are my comments for today.
Okay, we agree 100%. Thank you very much for the call.
Have a good day.
John, that's a very interesting observation because I've actually heard people say, you know, I'll be glad. Well, I said I'll be glad when it gets back to normal. And not being cognizant of, you know, what normal really looks like. We
right.
do have another call. Let me grab that caller real quick. Caller, 4661. Yeah, hello. Yes, you're live on air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I got something to say. I want to just make a quick comment, but this should show people that we as a nation isn't prepared for any type of pandemic going on.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, because you have no masks, you have no respirators. things that you were talking about earlier, it should open people's eyes. And then look at how the response and how they're locking everything down. We as a community should be talking about this, what will happen if this happens, and we have nothing prepared as these self-appointed leaders come out here and they don't help at all. They don't even stand at the news conference and tell people what to do.
Right. And I totally agree with that. And it is, you know, when you say self-appointed or elected leaders or whatever the case may be, you have a whole bunch of people in positions that aren't, I would say, visionaries or foreseers of what could possibly happen. Everybody knows that a flu pandemic, well, not everyone, I would say everyone, but people in those categories that work in those departments, whether it's, you know, Trump, he did fire, and this is another thing, and this is, I think, what we ran into when it comes to politics. When Obama, we had the swine flu, H1N1, and stuff like that, they weren't prepared. So when they weren't prepared and they figured it all out, when Trump came in, he fired those people. And so now when they were preparing and they had their plans in place and people were playing politics, now we're left in the hanging, or I would say out to dry, where we don't have protective PPE, personal protective equipment, and we have billions and billions and maybe trillions of dollars worth of weapons. So we have money and we have taxpayer dollars to go kill a lot of people or bomb.
Oh, yeah, for war.
We don't have, yeah, but we don't have anything for ourselves. And you touched on a major point. Why don't we have these things and why aren't these leaders talking about it? And right now, it should be totally focused in on masks, PPE, and ventilators. And how do we work the businesses and people who are maybe asymptomatic, maybe they can get back to work. So we have workers that are asymptomatic. You get tested, you can go start working back for these companies. You start learning how to build ventilators for what's approaching, just to be, you know, just to stay ahead of the ball game. Now, when we have these type of things, you know, prepared, we can see what new normal is. And like the other caller said, I just want to touch on what she said. She said, we have to figure out what new normal is. And that's a really big thing that we all must look at and say, normal as we know it is never going to be the same. And we have to think about the ramifications of what the future is going to look like, but also using the disparities and the things that we know that were inequitable in the past.
Yep.
So now change it for the future so we all can benefit, white, black, white, anything, you know, women, men, for the future. So I think the new normal is going to have to be made up by us and people in the community and everybody else.
Yeah, and before we go to our next caller, they tell me that's Mr. M from his palatial estate in South Minneapolis. We'll get to him in 1 second here, but I just like to throw in there the new normal has to be abnormal, and if we are still missing opportunities, because right now, I mean, I know several black Minnesotans that are scientists, engineers,
right.
And I mean, they're doing their own thing. I'm not criticizing them, don't get me wrong, but, you know, people needed ventilators made. They still do. That's an opportunity for one of these flagship agencies in this town to say, hey, let's get something together, let's start a little S-Corp or something. Let's get this going. Let's manufacture. Let's get these people in our community while this is going on some good jobs.
Yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's maybe us reaching out and, you know, other people in the community and our listeners also just reach out to these companies like 3M and Honeywell or Medtronic and say, hey, look, show us the blueprint. Show us what we got to do. They need to be able to give out blueprints and see what we can make in a way, maybe if it's 3D printing or whatever the case may be, the stuff that we need for our own community and work along with the private and the public to make these things happen for all of humanity. And I think that, like you said, there's opportunity in this, and everybody's not asking to get paid $1,000 an hour, but you know, some of these companies that are getting governmental help or federal help, and we don't have federal ventilators and they're giving them just cash money. If you're getting money, let's start implementing, these processes in place so we can get the things that we need for all of humanity, whether it's ventilators, masks, N95, nitrate gloves, or whatever the case may be.
I agree. Caller, Mr. M, you're live on the air. What's your question or comment?
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum salam, my brother.
Peace be upon you. This is the fault of one man. We are sitting here now because of a man that goes by 45, okay? He got me stuck up in this house all day. Got folks running around here wearing masks.
Yeah,
mailman comes hollering on my door the other day with a mask, called hollering about he got a package. Well, the mailman don't holler, but he just ring the bell and leave it. I'm not opening no door. He got a mask on. I say, leave the package down there. This is, we have to, I'm about right now ready to go start knocking on my, knocking on doors with my mask and say, do vote this man out of here.
And, you're talking about Governor Wall?
And then I'm going to go to the polls when they have
who
the votes. I'm talking about 45. That's exactly who I'm talking about. Because this is at his.
Guess what?
He won't release the things. He won't answer questions to people. He just hollers. He gets on and rants and raves. This is the one thing that we can do to help this situation is to get him out of here.
But wait, Jim. Trump didn't start the coronavirus.
He didn't. No, of course not. But he knew it was coming. He knew it was coming. He had all the information. He is not prepared. It's his administration that's not prepared to do this. And then he talks about he's going to hold back ventilators and things for people if they don't say what he says, if they don't like him, if they don't rush Limbaugh and Hannity and all them, give you a whole different spin on this thing. We have to turn this thing around from the top, and the best way to do it, I'm going to go knock on doors and tell people, do not vote for him. And then I'm going to go to the poll, and when they get ready to vote, I'm going to be standing there with my mask on and say, remember what I told you. Remember me. This is so important. I mean, he gets on there, it's Obama's fault. Everything's Obama's fault.
It is.
Obama's, and that excuse is so ridiculous. That's as bad as the dog ate my homework. That excuse is that man hasn't been president for 3 years. He needs to go. He's incapable. He doesn't care about people, and he needs to go. That's the main problem right there. And that's my opinion. I know you don't like it, Don, but this is got me stuck up in this house all day. I can't even go up to Curran's in the morning and get my little $2 breakfast. I'm in here trying to cook, burning up pots and pans and stuff. Don't know, all because of him.
I think more of the stay-at-home orders are just for everybody's safety. And whether you like Trump or not. And I think right now with the political season going on right now, the DNC just canceled last week their big party, the convention. And so I think Joe Biden really, he's been so quiet, he doesn't have a chance. I think 100%, you know, that Trump will win again, whether we like it or not. He'll win it just because we know in times of crises, the incumbent usually wins.
Yeah, and you know what? I was just trying to talk to him. Let me see if he's still put him on hold, because he wouldn't let me say anything. M, are you still there?
Yes, I am, sir.
Okay, well, check this out, man. Here goes the deal. Now, I know you don't like number 45. We won't even say his name. That's cool, and you can have your own opinion. But I don't think there's been an administration in the history of administration that could handle this kind of epidemic anywhere on Earth. This was not a planned thing. This thing, it just happened. So, I mean, if Obama was in office, people would say the same thing maybe about him and his administration. So, I mean, I have to look at it from a point of view and be objective and just say, okay, you cannot blame coronavirus on Trump. You can't really, that's not logical. You can't say that
what
because of his administration. I mean, you can have your opinion, of course. But okay, but you can have your opinion. That's cool. And, I mean, we could agree to disagree and then have a beer at 5 o'clock. I don't have any problem with that. But the thing is that there is no administration that I know of that has handled conflict or a pandemic well. You know, someone that handled it well, no one would die, or a few people would die. Here,
to a point where we got everybody got a mask, everybody got to stay at home, shut down everything.
Well,
people can't go to work. They can't make the money to pay their. They can't make the money all because of the way this is handled. This could have been handled a lot better. That's my only point. I mean, and to tell people you're not going to give them a ventilator, you're not going to give them what they need because
well,
the way they
I would agree.
You,
I would,
because of
I would
the way
agree.
They,
I
oh,
would agree.
No, I, you can't. That's indefensible in my mind. Indefensible.
Right.
No.
I think last night when we heard, I'm sorry to cut you off, my man, but I think you're totally correct about the whole ventilator situation. As America as a whole, we have to think about why we aren't prepared. And we've been prepared for wars and wars and wars and wars, whether it's Bush, Obama, Trump, or anybody else. We know that the hood has been the same all of the administration. So we have to say that, yes, with him being in power right now, we need to hear more directive on maybe how to make more ventilators instead of us asking and him saying that these ventilators are from the federal government and the state should have did more and why aren't certain states not ready and stuff like that. All those, that's political questions and you're playing around with people's lives. I think that if we as Americans all come together and say, hey, look, Trump, how can we help you? I know we don't have enough, and you're acting like those ventilators are yours, but they're not. And once people realize in the next 2 to 3 weeks when if this money doesn't come out, let's see, this is another thing. We have to get this money. This money has to come out, and that's another crisis. If this money doesn't come out, what does that look like? And people who are sick trying to get to the doctor, and there's mass chaos, it might happen in certain parts of the country, like we talked about Milwaukee, Chicago, Detroit. Once these cities, there's a little weakness and police can't go to do their jobs and the doctors and hospitals start getting sick, and we're not going to be worried about what 45 can do with 40,000 ventilators. 40,000 ventilators with 330 million people, that's not even logical to even talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We have to really focus in on being able to create, find opportunity. How can we channel our inner leadership skills to these companies and say, look, we need to demand that you guys give out all the blueprints for ventilators. How can the average human put it on YouTube, put it on Google? Here's a tutorial. Who can do it? Who got 3D printers? Make more 3D printers. Give everybody a 3D printer. Everybody start making it. We have to start thinking about innovation.
Exactly. I agree with that 100% because what we're doing, Jonathan, what I see we're doing as a black community, especially in Minnesota, we're doing a lot of whining and complaining.
Yeah, we whine a lot.
And I'm not trying to knock anybody, but there are policies on the book that if you write a couple paragraphs and send it to the revisor's office, they have to give it attention. Okay? If you send it to a senator, they have to give it attention.
Right.
You know, so why, I guess my question is, I've always stayed in my lane, not a politician, never desired to be a politician. But when you look at what's happening, you wonder, you know, well, why is this this way? Why this particular bill say this, but it excludes that?
Right.
And how come over so many years? See, Jonathan, I was born in St. Paul and raised in St. Paul to 71, then moved to Minneapolis. And throughout those 50-plus years, the poor black people have been in the same place.
Okay. Historically speaking, in Minneapolis and St. Paul, you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. It basically been the same place, the same situation. It's just different.
And what would you contribute that to?
Well, there's a couple things. We're going to contribute it to the lack of education, not reading, elected officials on both sides of the table. So I did not blame Democrats or Republicans. I blame them both, and independents and Greens, and people in our community. See, in 2020, actually back in 2008, it started happening here in Minnesota. What happened was it was easier for white philanthropy to outsource rejection and outsource discrimination and racism to people that look like us to deal with people that look like us. So you have things going on in this community. It started really happening bad in 2008 where they were making decisions, the United Way took $1 million from the Urban League, but the Urban League was not doing what they were supposed to do. And I'll leave it at that. I knew the inside story in detail, but I'm not going to be in it now. And so I attribute all this. We have a weak leadership, a social boutique leadership that is more – you've met the guys before, Jonathan. When you go meet these brothers and you talk to them and – the first thing they say is, oh, I'm on the board of directors of this, or I'm on the board.
And that's what it is. And within Minneapolis, you know, we know there's, you know, there's been self-appointed, like the other brother called in, self-appointed leaders. And that's why for me, I'm always been a solo, one-band camp kind of man, and I'm for the greater good for all of our people. So, like you said, there's a lack of leadership. And I think when we're talking about innovation, you have to have vision. Most of these people, when we go into these protests, I got white women and liberal white women telling me what racism feels like, a black man who deals with it, who would have had police put guns to my head and raid my house multiple times. I know what discrimination is like. So I'm not going to argue with these people who are trying to, you know, fill their social, you know, check boxes when I'm actually fighting against disparities and discrimination, which brings me and holds the whole movement back. You know, like you said, when they're saying, oh, I'm titled such and such and I'm this and that and I'm on this board or I'm on the school board or I'm on I got this much money from a grant or da 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 da. All that don't matter when we need ventilators and we need masks and we need computers for our kids. We need more black teachers. We need to find out what's going on in legislation and being able to understand and coherently have the cognitive ability to comprehend what is going on in legislation. There should be no way when a bill gets passed, you just read bits and pieces and parts of it, but don't read the small print. And it's not even really small print. They just put it in there in front of us, and we just don't read it. So I'm done going with the back and forth with some of these community leaders. I think we should all get together. And like I said, right now is a great opportunity where we say, look, 3M, Honeywell, Medtronic, they come here and they get these Democratic leaders that get voted in, but the Democratic leaders come to the black community to get their votes. And we don't understand the power structure, but we're willing to go on stage and go do a rap song for them and just say to be on stage with them versus saying, hold on, this is what we need from you guys, especially if you're getting the kickbacks and you're using us to get in.
Yeah. And You're absolutely right. You don't know how many times, Jonathan, that I've heard of people in our community having meetings with high-end politicians that could change policy, and they would go in there, and they wouldn't ask for anything. They just wanted to do a photo op for a Facebook post.
Right, and that's what it is. It's a lot of picture-taking. It's a lot of I'm going to the gala with them. I'm working with them. I'm helping them out. I really don't care. We don't care about the other. I need to see real action because, like I told the other person, the hood has been the same. And like you just said, the hood has been the same for 50 years. Okay, that's unacceptable. With millions and millions, and some of these organizations work. There's we have Target here. We have all of these various corporations within Minneapolis, within minutes of the North Side, and we can't get none of their money. We can't get hired at these places in higher up jobs. I'm not just talking about essential workers now. We're happy because we got $2 an hour extra when we've been demanding $15 an hour, and the CEOs are getting golden parachutes, and we don't understand who the CEO is. Most of I was asking people the other day, go, do you know who the CEO of Target was? And they're working at Target as an essential worker. And they didn't know. So yeah. I think it's imperative. That's the word I'm going to use. Imperative that we figure out what's going on. Stop the bickering, the politics on the local level. We're not even actually in politics. We're just arguing about who got the best photo shoot with the politician.
Exactly. And our phone number again for the callers are 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And we do have a caller. It looks like our friend from the Midwest. Good morning and welcome to Our Black News. How you doing, sir?
Good morning. How are you today?
We're doing okay.
I have a question for you gentlemen. Where is this money coming from, these $1,200 checks they're talking about giving out? Because we never have enough money. Whenever they talk about single payer mm-hmm. and health care, there's no money. Mm-hmm. When they talk about forgiving student loans, there's no money to do that. We can't do that. Right. When they talk about reparations for slavery, we just don't have the money for that. It'll blow a hole in the deficit. But we seem to be giving out, you know, these $1,200 socialist checks. And now it seems like they're talking about possibly giving multiple checks to millions and millions of Americans. Yeah, so I'm confused. I'm completely confused. Can you explain to me?
Let me tell you.
Where's this money coming from?
I can tell you exactly. Let me tell you exactly where it's coming. It's coming from the Federal Reserve, and the chairman, his name is Jerome Powell. So if you guys want to look that up, it's from the Federal Reserve. And so what they do is they print the money. We don't have any backing of it. This country is always stolen, faked it, lied about it, and all that. So when we're asking about reparations and we're waiting for these checks, and we're waiting for checks like we waited for right now, currently, like we are waiting for our reparation checks, and we don't even know how that's going to look. So I think that the money's coming from the Federal Reserve. They're printing it fast too. They're printing it. They probably already had it printed, and they're just going to give it away. And then they're going to say, you see, a lot of people don't understand what just happened. And let me give you the rundown. Last week and the week prior to that, the Federal Reserve pumped $2 trillion just to stabilize the markets. Okay. That's $2 trillion. And the dollar never changed. And then each day they put out an article and said, we're going to pump $1 trillion a day until the package gets done. So each day they pumped another trillion. So we're up to about $7 to $8 trillion. Then they signed the package deal worth $2 trillion. So another $2 trillion. So that's $10 trillion, and our dollar never changed. So it maintained the same. So all of this influx of money has hit the system, right? But our dollar cheeseburgers are still the same. Gas is going to go down because of the Saudi Arabian-Russia fight, because Saudi Arabia dropped it down to $22 a barrel because of Iran finding the 50 billion barrels of oil. So they're fighting Russia, and Saudi Arabia are fighting because Iran is about to hit the market. So a lot of those things are playing a part into this. So when you say, where's the money coming from? It's coming from the Federal Reserve, and there's a lot more money now in our system, trillions of dollars. So all these people getting these $1,200 checks, this is why it's vital for us to have a socioeconomics, black community-based, businesses where the money gets regenerated within our community, because them $1,200 checks, if you go spend them $1,200 checks to Gucci, guess where that money's going? If you're spending that $1,200 checks on rims and all that, and you're not buying from black businesses, guess what? That 6 hours of the community-based money that circulates in our community is gone within seconds, and it goes out to the other communities. And these other communities that already got a bailout, all these checks, they trickle down, the trickle-down effects, the $1,200 checks, they're going to go right back up to the top 10%. The economy is going to go right back. There are, and essential workers are going to go back to $13 an hour, and the divide will be even greater.
Yep, agreed.
Yeah, well, I guess my question is, if they can print money to hand out checks, then can't they also do it for, like, single-payer health care? Wouldn't that be more beneficial than just handing out checks?
Yes.
I mean, that
yes,
people...
Yes, you're right. But the point is that they it was never intended for health care for all. It was never intended for Black folks, if you talk about reparations or health care, single-payer health care. It's never been intended to help everybody. If it was, we would have did that in 1776. Never intended that way. So for us to even keep on thinking that this system is going to do that without us fighting, like the one lady called earlier and said, well, when it goes back to normal, we can figure out the disparities and figure out what we need to do. This is the time to do that. So when we want to say, hey, look, hold on, and this is the perfect question that you posed. Where is the money for the reparations if y'all just did that? You've been lying to us the whole time. Like, we know y'all been lying to us the whole time. So now let's demand it. And we can't go up on stage anymore dancing and scratching our head and tap dancing for the Democratic Party. We don't need no party. We need to let them know, hold on, we're not voting for none of y'all until we get these checks for ADOs. So this money ain't for all Black people. So, you know, Africans that came over here first generation, they might not get the ADOs check. You might be able to get a discrimination check. But, you know, for people like, for example, myself, I'm only going to speak on myself. My great grandma was a slave. Her mother was a slave. All my dad's side of the family were slaves. So that generational wealth that wasn't generated back then, and when the 1862 American Homestead Act happened, and all that money was given away and all that land, and we didn't get nothing, you need to put that into account. So when they can print that, I want that check. And I did the totals, and it's looking like it's $20 trillion. And it looks like it's $275,000 per person, free college for three generations and all that. And those questions are going to start happening. So that's a good question, my brother.
Can I just one question for Mr. Allen? Another kind of thing that confuses me. Isn't this handing out of these checks? Isn't that socialism? Isn't Donald Trump, isn't he anti? I mean, he's against socialism, isn't he? I mean, I thought he was. I mean, I called in. I'm confused this morning because this confuses me. Huh?
At any other time, it would be considered socialism. But because of the current circumstances, I think we can qualify this.
Don. And I don't want to backtrack on it, but as that man just said, if we want to do classified and tell the truth, I'm going to tell the truth now. This is a form of socialism.
Okay, I can agree with that, but what I'm saying that I'm not going to basically point at this and say socialism to go against the GOP or Republican platform because there's a need for stimulus.
It's a pandemic. I agree.
I'm just happy it didn't go to the bank. Hey, thanks for the call, Steve. We have a couple more calls holding. We're expecting an international call here. Let me see. You're live on Our Black News. Caller, go ahead.
Hello, Donnie.
Hey, Barb Davis White. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and I love these callers. I can't get enough.
Okay. Go ahead. What's your question?
Well, my comment is that Donald Trump has decided to help the American people any way he can. People are sitting in their homes right now with no food. I live in Kurdistan. I need to back up. I live in Iraq, so I live in the middle of the Middle East. I live in the middle of the Middle East, and we defeated ISIS over here. And when you talk about socialism. Socialism is not handing out anything to anybody. Socialism is the government being in control of every single company, every single person, every single bank, every single entity, and the people get nothing. The people are handed nothing. So this stimulus that is happening, I'm watching the news from Iraq, and I try to get as much information as I possibly can. and you're not going to get it from CNN. CNN is attacking Donald Trump for whatever he says. If he says, I love America, that he gets attacked. So it is not a color thing. It's not a race thing. But the axe is being laid to the root as to who we as black people have to, how we're looking at family, how we're looking at fathers, how we're looking at ourselves, how we're looking at individuality. The axe is being laid to the root, and a whole lot of things are getting exposed by this man being in office. And the plantation
and
mentality isn't working. It just isn't working. And Go ahead, Don.
No, I was going to say, I understand, like, when you're talking about that that extreme form of socialism where they have every part of, like, the true definition of socialism, you're exactly right. And that would never actually fly in America. But it's a form of whenever Americans say socialism and they refer to Hitler and stuff like that. We're not talking about that. But I understand where the government has all their hands, and then you see the lackadaisical response that we're having now. And I understand where, like, you hear, you know, medias and their bias and stuff like that. And, you know, no one's perfect, but I think right now, with all of the things that are concerning the world, I think that America could be better prepared as far as PPE wise. And if we're talking about COVID-19, we have to talk about, what are the things that we need right now that are affecting us as far as the pandemic? And I would say it's the leadership on trying to innovate people or Americans, Benice, to say, look, he already put the defensive act. It's the defensive, and you might know better than I am, but he required some companies to be able to have to make these ventilators like GM and 3M and all these other places. So I think, like, America will never see the form of socialism that you're talking about, maybe in a authoritarian or a dictatorship type regime. But in America, especially with the Constitution, when we're talking about healthcare for all, we have trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars, and we've stolen stuff and we took oil, we've done all this, we can provide for the American people or our soldiers, because our soldiers are coming back and they're killing themselves, and you go down to the VA and they're not getting the stuff that they need. So that's
I agree.
Unacceptable. And so
I agree wholeheartedly. But I want to touch on the fact that when Donald Trump ran for office, he never declared himself as a Democrat or a Republican. He ran as more independent than anybody's ever run. Number two, 3M is under investigation right now. I live in the Middle East. And what they're doing is they're sending the masks. They make the masks. They're sending the masks for cash money, for dollars, for American dollars. They're sending the masks overseas. So America, when I wrote back to America asking them to ship masks over here, they didn't have any masks available. How do you not have masks available? And the other thing I want to say is that I'm a mortician. I am a registered licensed funeral director on call. If I were in America right now, I would be on call 24 hours a day in order to hand out masks, in order to hand out medications if they were needed, to go in and pick up bodies if bodies are. Right now, you can't even have a funeral in America. Those masks, they're under investigation because 3M is taking money from foreign countries, and they refuse to sell the masks out, or they say there's a shortage, and they will not sell them to the Americans.
And that's called the bad parts of capitalism, because now they're talking about the highest bidder. So this is where we're in the middle, and we're saying they're doing it in America right now. The Governor Cuomo, the masks are 85 cents to make. Wholesale, okay, maybe even less.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have masks that are wholesale $85, and then they're putting them to $9, $10 a piece. And states are saying, well, New York has more money. They get more taxes. Oh, we'll pay $10 a piece for all of us getting it. The capitalism is eating itself from within. Now these companies, every Minnesotan should have a mask. All of our healthcare workers, we have the Mayo Clinic, Fairview and them don't even have PPE. Many of these people who are reaching out to me that are nurses and doctors and stuff like that, they don't even have PPE. And they're saying within 2 to 3 weeks, we have masks. This is unacceptable for America. You know, I would
it
say
is.
At least. So,
I agree. I absolutely agree. But the other thing I want to say is.
Yeah.
The man who makes my pillow is from Minnesota, former drug addict, and he decided to take his factory, and he's saying, I'm pushing my pillow to the side. I'm manufacturing 50,000 masks a week. When he said that, he stood in the White House and said it. He got attacked last week. He got attacked from CNN. He got attacked from MSNBC. He got attacked because he said that. He thanks God for his life and what has happened. He's coming forward. I know people are coming forward and they're doing things and they're helping and they're getting involved. And so, and President Trump is helping with this.
You're right. Well, with Mike, because his name is Mike Liddell. And I've met him a couple of times, you know, being that I'm from Minnesota. He's a good guy, and he did change his life around, and he is stepping up to the plate. But companies, and this is where our elected leaders like Tim Walz and Jacob Fries and the people that are in Hennepin County, they stand up and say 3M, every single Minnesotan first gets a mask, and we should have all this stuff being created right now. Then also, being that, like we touched on earlier in the show, that all of the states mostly that are surrounding us haven't even put a stay-at-home in place. So that means there are people running around still, they're contaminating themselves, and we're not going to be ready for what's about to happen in the next month and a month and a half. And so companies need to come together, and we need leadership to stand up and say, 3M, I need you to get everybody right now. I don't care who you got to hire. You start hiring people, get everybody a mask, get everybody in them where we need spaces 6 feet apart if we have to use hotels, and we have to start building these masks. And we need to help people like Mike Lindell and these companies who are willing to open up their places to be able to create this stuff, because I don't want to see 2 to 3% of Americans die. And 2 to 3% of 330 million is how much? You know, that's 9 million people, 8 million people, and they're not telling us the truth. And so we have to figure out what's going
right.
on. And, you posed a lot of good items right there.
Thank you, my dear.
Agreed.
And it was really good to talk to you, and you are right on, right on. It's leadership.
Hey, Barb, thanks
we have a leadership back
you.
Thank
you. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Doc. Thank you.
Thank you. We have another caller also here. Let me see. Caller, you are live on our Black News 4013. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, Donald.
Good morning.
Hey, Mr. question of reparation is a bad question. I'm not seeking reparation. My grandmother was a slave and worked in the cotton field. I want restitution. You seek restitution first, reparation second. I want her to be paid for those days and years she spent in the cotton field. She was born in 1885 and died in 1984. Kate spent a lot of days in the cotton field. I want her to get paid for those days. So you don't have to give me anything. Just pay me for Kate's work. That's all I want. And I think restitution is the second step you take, not the first. And I think a lot of people get it mixed up. A good friend of mine wrote a book called Hidden in a Book. And he goes to that whole historical issue of reparations and the misconception of reparations. I want restitution. Restitution. When you steal something from me, I want to get paid for what you stole. And I think that's a better way of getting at that issue. The other thing.
Right. Well, how do you. Go ahead. I was going to say, when you say the restitution part, so I would say, like, if we're talking about restitution in a legal term, when restitution comes, they add it up or they equate whatever the value is, and then they pay you on the back end. Being that she's dead, who gets that money?
Many of her grandkids are still alive.
And that would be, and so many people, if they're screaming about, so when we say health care for all and they say socialism, they're going to call that reparations, my man. And so when you say reparations, restitution.
I don't have anybody to define it. I don't have anybody. I define it. I don't let them define it. You have to understand what happens oftentimes, as with affirmative action and all those other programs. They start out for supposedly to assist certain segments of our society. The politician goes in and said, if you want this bill passed, you have to include white women. Okay? Otherwise, you are not going to pass this bill. You got to understand the historical stuff. I don't have time to go into all that stuff, but I think that
you
have
to. When you said reparation, okay, the word reparation and restitution are virtually the same word. And so the reparation or restitution in the dictionary term, if I wanted to go to Webster's or Oxford or anything else, is it's the making the amends of wrong for a wrong one has done by paying money or otherwise helping those who have been wronged. And so I would totally agree that there has to be some part. So when you talk about restitution or you talk about reparations, and you know things like I touched on earlier about the American Homestead Act of 1862, when they gave millions of acres of land away, and you know those were places like Buffalo, Minnesota, or Delano, Minnesota, or these rural suburb areas where they gave all this land out. So now the grandfathers have passed it down. When you're talking about your grandmother and grandfather, they would have got land as well, and they would have passed it down, and that's called generational wealth. So we have to now put a number on that. So when I, in being that a lot of us are African-American, but we also have Native, this is our land as well. So it's our land plus our ancestors worked the fields and did it all. And my great-grandmother was 105, and she was a slave as well, Memphis, Tennessee. And I hear you. But the numbers, we have to say, do we get a land? Do we get money? Do we get a form of check? And a brother touched on it earlier. If they can print the money, they can do this. And whether it's free education, what would you want? What would you want for reparations? And I know a lot of people, being that we're in a capitalistic society, they want money.
I want to play devil's advocate for you. So the conversation, Jonathan, Mr. Tucker, and we've been having about restitution and reparations, and that a lot of people are having these conversations. Okay, these conversations have gone on that I'm aware of for the last 40 years. There's restitution law. There's not really a clear definition of reparation law. But why are the conversations? Because, you know, you can see someone's point of view if they said, hey, you guys are always whining about this, blah, 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 you know? And
the Japanese got it.
Yeah. And so you have all of these state statutes, these Fed statutes, you know, United States Constitution. Mr. Tucker was talking about equal rights and affirmative action and Brown versus the Board of Education, which is one of the worst things that could have happened to black students. I'll just say that. And all this other stuff that has been not effective. What point are we missing? What do we need to be doing to make them effective? Go ahead, Mr. Tucker.
Well, I think that we have people in our community, in the American black community, have spent a lot of time trying to be accepted versus being respected. And I think Brown versus Board of Education boils down to, I have matriculated to the institutions of higher learning. I'm educated. Why don't you guys accept me? And I think that's a core issue in our community even today. You know, I grew up in a family that we didn't look up to nobody and we didn't look down on nobody. I don't care whether you accept me or not, but I'm going to force you to respect me. And I think we need to change our whole focus on being respected versus being accepted. And they think that I have more degrees than a thermostat, so therefore I'm not like those other blacks. So you guys should accept me. And we got a lot of
and
people in this community, our so-called affirmative action, equity participation folks, think they got there because of their own hard work. I'll say to you, prior to 1963, okay, Harvard didn't have any blacks in it. University of Minnesota did not graduate a black from its business school from 1952 to 1973. And there's a lot of blacks who went to HBU colleges that hung around in a pool hall and walked down the street with a wine bottle in their back pocket. They did not get those jobs, y'all, until the
I'm in 100,000% agreement with you, 1,000%. And I would say this. Yeah, and I use a different term for them, and they don't like it, and I say it, you know, and it's you know, and whether it's Uncle Tom or a sellout behavior, when you do look upon others downly because you've excelled through white supremacy or the education within white supremacy, and I totally agree, and I do know black folks that feel like if they have a master's degree or a doctorate degree, they're better than other black folks. And that's the pinning of the two groups within it, whether it's light skin versus dark skin or educated versus not. All of us have to understand that first you're black. You come out and your skin color is going to tell you that. And a lot of times when these jobs weren't available, when these institutions didn't allow us to do it, and these people are still around. So some of the people that I look up to, and when I say look up to, I respect, and they might not have degrees, but they got more knowledge than the man who got two doctorate degrees, and they've been through stuff, and it's been experience, and they felt through discrimination, and they still here, and they went through mass incarceration times and stuff like that, and they might have criminal records. So I totally 100% agree with that. But I think it's time for us, throughout all of the things that we've done bad, you know, that have been done bad to us, that we do not worry about being accepted but respected and say, hey, hold on. This is what – and we go because we're in a system that is rooted in racism that is working through white supremacy. When I say white supremacy, I'm not talking white people. White people benefit off of white supremacy and they privilege that's fake, but it's an illusion. But they use it because it's been honored in the system and they've done it for so long. But when we step up to the system like we've always had, when we fought for voting rights, when we fought for civil rights, when we fought for all these different things that other people benefited, now it's time for us to say, look, we're done jigaboo dancing, we're done tap dancing, we're done scratching our head when it don't itch, and we start putting things to the paper and we say, hold on, we can bring it back to Black Wall Street. We can bring it back to the things that we know we need. So whether it be education.
let me say this here. My grandmother was also a part of the Black Wall Street, and she was a very wealthy black woman. And she had an attitude. I think what we have right now is that it was stated in the 60s, until such time as the system cannot absorb the so-called equity participation and affirmative action people, and they no longer can get a job based on their so-called assistance to some of us who are less fortunate than they, then you will find some changes. Until then, the system will absorb them. They have a light bill to pay. And as long as they have a light bill to pay and they watch TV and see all those pretty people on there and all the accoutrements, they will play the game. They will play the game. They didn't do that when I was 20 and when I was in my teens. They didn't do that because we took them outside and chastised them. They didn't do that. And I think that you can't do any of those things anymore. All that's taboo. No. You just can't do that. but we have too much.
No, and we have to start treating each other better. That's another thing. We have to – that's the anger. And that's also rooted in white supremacy. We have to start loving each other. We have to start, you know, and not necessarily agreeing to disagree, but we can all have our points of view, whether, like you were talking on it, restitution or reparations, and we figured it out. We have to get past the initial anger part and the frustration part that we're all in this fight together. And I think that if we come to the table within this system of white supremacy and we use this system and say, look, this is what we demand, this is what we need, this is right, and a lot of people aren't going to be happy, and there's going to have to be a negotiation, and they can figure it out because we have Social Security numbers and all that. But once we do, we can start formulating these communities like your grandmother was in, and we can start helping other communities as well, and we'll eventually take the lead because we built the country. Our culture is the lead. When we say voting rights for all, we've been screaming that. Equal rights for all, we've been screaming that. Civil rights for all, we've been screaming that for hundreds of years. They're just catching on because they think that.
Yeah, but you have to remember that economics trumps philosophical ideals. Economic trumps philosophical ideals.
Right, but we create the economic plan. So right now we can say, hold on, we're still getting paid. Hold on, we can get paid. Let us create the masks. If we have a Black Wall Street, we say, hold on, we can do masks. Well, our masks are the best, and we're going to produce this many and this how many, and
yeah.
We have the blueprints. And y'all.
Yeah, but you ought to heard some of those stories that my grandmother told about that. I won't get into all of that. I think one of the other issues we have, we keep trying to outrun our shadow. We keep trying to outrun our shadow. You can't outrun your shadow. That black skin that you tote around. You can't outrun that. I don't care how many degrees you have, how intelligent you are, how well read you are. You cannot outrun your black skin. Forget it, y'all.
Within this system. Within this system, so if you see when separation, so you know about this, separation but equal and integration and stuff. But what they realized, you know why they wanted integration? They wanted integration because now they can say, oh, you got to apply over here, and now we can tell you, no, we don't want you to do it. And then when we do it that way, you can't get no jobs, you get your girl pregnant, you can't get no assistance because we ain't got you no jobs, and the rule is you got to get up out the house, so he goes somewhere else, and
listen,
now you can't get no job.
Listen, this idea of having all this training and our education in order to get a job is a farce. It's a forest. I've been in a situation where I was told, Mr. Tucker, we don't need nobody with your skill. We don't need nobody to do it that good. Come on. You know, if people buy into it.
Look, it's discrimination. It is. Absolutely. I agree. If you don't need a degree to tell somebody 2 + 2 = 4.
I hate to break up this beautiful conversation, but we're running right up against the end of our show. And maybe
you, Don.
Next week, but Mr. Tucker, you need to call. Jonathan, again, I mean, this was a damn wonderful show. We have about 40 people in the queue. Sorry, I'm not going to be able to get to you today, but I appreciate you calling in and listening, and those watching on Facebook Live. Any last words there, Jonathan?
I think it's Jonathan Kidd. Young man, appears to be a young man, probably under 50, is a very got very promising, and he's a thinker.
Thank you. I appreciate that, my sir. I appreciate that.
Okay. You have any last words? I think you cut off there.
Well, for me, I would just thank everybody for tuning in. I know we touched on a lot of different subjects, but just keep on tuning in and calling in, and I think these conversations must be had, and I think this could change a larger part of our community. So thanks, Don, for doing this, and let's keep it going.
I appreciate that. We also, when this corona thing dies down, when people are let out, we've just got an email. I'll forward it to you. We've been invited to broadcast the show at this particular venue, but I'll tell you one-on-one after we get off.
Okay, wonderful, great.
So, hey, we'd like to thank everybody for listening, and we're going to let James Brown take us home. We'll be back next Saturday at 9:30 a.m. to listen to Our Black News.
Smile.